Welcome to this week's episode of Off the Assembly Line. I'm your host, Rebecca Reed, and every week I sit down for possibility-sparking conversation with innovative educators and entrepreneurs who are bringing the future to education, one beautiful disruption at a time. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Today's episode is all about innovation. What it is, what it's not, and how to create an innovation culture in your school, district, or classroom. I wanted to do this episode early in the show's life because, really, this is what Off the Assembly Line is all about. And just to kind of level set, and so you guys know where I am when I use the term innovation, what I mean is the creation or introduction of something new that makes things better for students and educators. So we might be talking about a new methodology, a new organizational process or classroom strategy, or a product of some kind. It might be new to the world, or it might just be new to your classroom or school ecosystem, but the defining quality is that it's different, it's disruptive, and it's making things better for students and educators. Today I'm talking with Eric Schneider about how to create a culture of innovation in your organization. Eric is the president and co-founder of Innovate K-12, which drives strategic innovation for schools and districts across the U.S. using a crowdsourcing approach that brings all stakeholders into the process. Innovate K-12 won my heart early on when I visited their website and saw their banner that reads, "Connecting you to the greatest innovators in education, your teachers, paraprofessionals, administrative staff, custodians, principals, and students." Nail on the head. So let's jump in.
Eric, thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rebecca. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I'm trying not to geek out too much at the content of our conversation today, but I'm honestly so excited to see where we go because the concept and practice of innovation has such powerful potential for schools and really the education system at large and beyond, but sometimes doesn't feel like it's the most accessible or feasible practice. And I think that's due in part to different understandings of what innovation is and the role of it in schools. So I'd actually love to kind of dive into the deep-ish end of the pool first and ask you, what is innovation and why should schools care about it?
Yeah, no, it's awesome. It's a great place to start. Maybe even just to back up a tiny step, you know, what it's not. You know, I think in our work, a lot of times, people have this sense that innovation is sort of synonymous with new technology, software, hardware, and we really have a bigger vision of innovation than that. It's certainly a part of it. It's a subset. It's super important. But in our work at Innovate K-12, we really find that if you narrow your vision or your definition of innovation to things that are technology related, you're missing about 75% of the opportunity. So that's just a clarification on the front end. You know, we really see at Innovate K-12, we see innovation as sort of this ethos. You know, it's like this creative, optimistic, even sort of hopeful belief that things could be better, you know, because there's such an inertia in education. There's so much tradition and to be fair, a lot of that is built on sort of an economy of scale. You know, if we're going to get 3,000 high school kids in and out of this building, we've got to do things a certain way, you know? And so I don't want to dismiss that, but I know so many educators who, you know, see, you know, that there are ways we could do this better. And they, and we really believe in giving those people a voice. And that's really what Innovate K-12 is about. You know, the point you made at the beginning, you know, why should we care? For me, and so much of what we believe at Innovate K-12, you know, that teachers really need a voice. Educators need a voice in the process. So often, you know, they're left out of the problem solving and problem identification, and they're just sort of given instructions and what to do, and we think that's a problem. But yeah, at a much deeper level, you know, we really believe that we need to do this for the kids. You know, that the kids, you know, our students are graduating from our schools, they're going out into a world that is changing so fast. And I know we say that's like a cliche, but it's But the fact is that they're going to work in companies that are going to expect them to understand innovation and to expect them to know, you know, how to solve new problems in new ways. And, you know, if we're not preparing them for that, we're doing them a huge disservice. So we really, Innovate K-12, we're really all about, you know, yes, let's make sure teachers and frontline staff have a voice in identifying problems and solving them. But let's get that to the kids as fast as possible and let them be a part of that and our communities as well. That's a real core key part of our mission.
Oh, that's fantastic. You said so many good things in there. And I'm like kind of hyped on what you just ended with on bringing this and, you know, putting this in the hands of students. And 100%. And I love that you called the idea of innovation. I mean, I'm stripping this down a little bit, but a hopeful ethos. That's such a powerful foundation. And, you know, thinking about changing institutions, it's very much like trying to turn a barge, right? It kind of takes a whole lot of energy, a lot of people, and some time in there, but also this attitude of we can, you know, we can turn it where it needs to be turned, and we can head in an even stronger direction. So I love that kind of underlying attitude. I'm excited to get into like what this actually looks like for ed leaders, teachers, and students, but I kind of want to back up first and ask a little bit about your journey. You know, what's your origin story? How did you come to be a catalyst for innovation in schools?
Right. You know, I mean, I'm almost 30 years in public education. It's crazy to say that, but I started in 1990. And I think I've just always had this, this sort of core belief that that we could make things better. And it's just when I look back on my career, it's always been there. But about 8 years ago, I was hired by a school district here in Minnesota called Minnetonka Public Schools. I was hired to be the associate superintendent, and the charge statement was really unique. It was, you know, yeah, run the academic program, but the school board at that time really wanted a kind of a grassroots approach to innovation. You know, Minnetonka had always been an innovative school district, but the board was a, you know, really savvy school board, and they knew that the future was not about top down innovation; it was really about bottom up innovation. So they challenged me to build that kind of a culture, and that really set me on the journey that ended with Innovate K-12, or has taken a new form with Innovate K-12, in that we built a really great model that engaged staff in a really meaningful way, staff and students and parents. And so we had a lot of other school districts interested in doing what we were doing, and it just became such a demand that I knew the only way to do it was to kind of spin that out into a company called Innovate K-12 and start doing this work, more as a commitment to help other districts have that kind of culture that we had built in Minnetonka.
Mm. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about your work. What are you guys doing, kind of at an operational level, for schools and districts?
Yeah, so the best way to think of the Innovate K-12 toolkit is it's a combination of three, you know, methods that are that exist in kind of the public domain. So we combine crowdsourcing and human-centered design and something called lean startup. And then that last one might not be as familiar to people, but it's very familiar to entrepreneurs, folks who have great ideas, but not the resources to really build out the whole solution. So, but Eric Ries wrote a book called Lean Startup, and it's a really important part of our method. And so, our toolkit, again, we start off the school, we teach school districts how to start the year with a crowdsourcing innovation event. And that could face staff, it could face students, it could face parents, community, all of the above. It could be an open challenge where we're saying something like, what should we be doing differently to better meet the needs of our students, right? Or it could be a really focused challenge, like how might we do a better job of personalizing learning for our kids, So it's up to the organization to decide like what's the scope and scale of the event. But what we what we help schools and districts do is kind of run that event, socialize around these ideas, and at some point engage people in voting or you know, kind of identifying what are the top ideas. And you know, this is sort of oftentimes referred to as the front end of innovation, kind of the fun, engaging, brainstorming part of the process. But once you identify what you want to work on, now you have to step into the back end of innovation. You have to start, you know, having a process for how do we attack this idea or this problem. And so we've identified human-centered design or design thinking as the most effective tool. And so, you know, that's the process that we use. And what's just awesome is we find there are a lot of educators who have already kind of found human-centered design and they're using it either in their classrooms or in their schools in some way or another. So, but as you get towards the end of human-centered design, you know, for those who are familiar, you know, you always start with empathy, super important. You know, then you're into sort of defining the problem. That's stage two. Then stage three is ideating. That's that brainstorming, exciting stage. Then you go into prototype development and then finally testing. And when we get to those fourth and fifth stages, that's where we bring in that lean startup method, where we really, you know, help educators understand how to test their ideas without spending a lot of money. And you know, you'd think that educators would be just super intuitive in that space, because we don't have any money and we're used to that. But it's really hard. You know, I think it's hard for everybody. It's hard to imagine how can we take an idea and really, you know, shrink the sandbox, you know, shrink the test, so that we can get some data that we can show people who do manage budgets and show them, you know, hey, this works, this is working. And so that's a really important step. And I, you know, when I was presenting this portfolio of ideas to our school board, you know, what always made it, I felt like what made it super powerful was when I could say, you know, I've got data to show that this is going to work. And I haven't spent hardly any district resources on this yet, but I've got super confidence that if we do invest in this, it is going to work. And I think, you know, in education, we are actually really, really bad at that. We spend a lot of time finding solutions and then we throw them to scale right away with a big investment. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, the organization wasn't ready. They didn't understand yet this solution, and it ends up being, you know, in many cases, just a huge waste of money. And so we really we try to protect this school districts from that mistake by showing them, you know, how to test these ideas before you're spending a lot of money. That's that lean startup mentality. And so we, you know, again, crowdsourcing, human-centered design, lean startup, we take those three ideas and we knit them together, and it really takes the whole school year. So, you know, we run the event in the fall, we do the design workshops in the winter, and then we're testing and prototyping and developing those ideas in the, you know, sort of winter into spring. So you get to the end of the school year and you've sort of got your portfolio ready and you can decide what you want to move forward.
That's fantastic. A lot going on there. I mean, you guys are really, you're taking the, you know, proven best practices from industry, you know, from the innovative world and integrating them and then translating it for schools, districts, teachers, students. I love that you are, you know, pulling in the lean startup methodology. I'm a huge fan of Eric Ries's work and that community, you know, overall. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned before, the desire to bring students into this innovative process as fast as possible. And one of the things I love about Lean Startup is it's really translatable to the learning process for students. I'm curious what synergies you are seeing there and if you're seeing students kind of powerfully be able to adopt Lean Startup, human-centered design, and bring that into their classrooms. Is that happening at all?
You know what? It's amazing. It's absolutely all of us who are part of Innovate K-12. It's our favorite part. You know, we originally built this to be given to staff and communities, but the students are just literally blowing our minds with how fast they take to this process, and how quickly they understand that, you know, this isn't about you know, having a successful prototype, you know, getting across the finish line with a win, so to speak. I mean, mm-hmm. kids understand very quickly that they're learning a process that is transferable, that they can take with them in life. I mean, it's so interesting, Rebecca, because initially we were nervous about bringing this to our students because we were worried that they would experience the failure and it would be, you know, heartbreaking. And the opposite was the case, right? I mean, the kids were so energized by the process and they were not at all driven by the outcome or the product. And we have about 30 school districts in our network right now. And I think we have 9 or 10 of them are running student events. So student facing events.
Great.
And several of them are taking that model down to middle school. So it's, you know, it's not just high school kids, it's middle school. And I'm confident that there's going to be elementary school versions of this coming very soon. And, you know, it's really, I mean, I think, you know, it's been really rewarding for us to see how the students take to this process. They see that it's a real tangible approach to solving problems that is collaborative. It's very 21st century. And the kids pick up very quickly that this is a toolkit they're going to take with them when they go out into the world. And, you know, when we watch that happen, those of us who are close to this, we go like, hey, the world is in good shape. If kids are graduating with this skill set, they're going to be fearless. They're going to know how to, you know, in a very calm, you know, measured way, they're going to know how to attack problems. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I love that. And honestly, you mentioned elementary school students. The earlier, the better, you know, that they can start to step into yes. this way of thinking. Yes. You know, it's something I've seen in my experience in the classroom with problem-based learning is how quickly this iterative process can reframe the idea of failure for students. You know, so they're going through it and, you know, we hear the phrase fail quickly a lot, you know, out in the innovative spaces, but, you know, I'd love to put forth a campaign where we change that to learn fast rather than fail fast. But that's what I've really seen students adopt is this idea of, oh, it's just another step in the learning process. It's just moving me closer to a solution that really works well. And that can even start to reframe their learning process, even in core subject areas. So just a thought there. But I'd love to know, coming out of, you know, the work you're doing with these 30 different school districts, what are some of the best innovations you've seen? What are some of those game changers that have come out of this process?
You know, when I'm asked this question, you know, I think it's really important to offer examples that really are lean, because, you know, there certainly are going to be some solutions that are going to come through this process where at the end of the day, the district is going to say, you know what, let's invest in this because this is clearly working. So there are those, but, a lot of our members surface when they run an event with their staff, they find the topic of mental health is just rocketing to the top of the idea events. Because I think frontline staff, teachers, paraprofessionals, they're seeing students presenting anxiety, depression, some of these mental health issues. At rates that are just way beyond anything they've seen in previous years. I think we're all aware of this sort of epidemic. And so when our members are kind of running their crowdsourcing events, it's not uncommon to see multiple ideas swirling around this topic of mental health. You know, and some of these solutions that people come up with are very expensive. You know, like we need more counselors, right? And those are $100,000, you know, for every counselor at least. And so, you know, these can be very expensive solutions to a really, you know, pressing problem of mental health. And we had a member that, you know, was really clear with their, you know, group, look, this was the highest rated idea from our event, but we don't have $100,000 for a, you know, to add a counselor. And And so they went into the design workshop with just clarity around that constraint. And this has got to be a lean solution. And they did some really awesome work around that. And what they ended up doing was they ended up reaching out to a neighboring university, state university, that had a licensure program for school counselors and social workers. And so they built a partnership with that state university to have students doing field work in the high school within this district, basically providing a drop-in center for kids who are feeling, the effects of mental health related issues. And, for zero cost, they were able to really meet a lot of need within that school environment. And it really built this partnership with the state university that grew over the years. So, a super lean solution with really great impact and deep relationship building between the two organizations. So it's just what started off with we need $100,000 for another counselor turned into a much bigger, better solution and very lean. So. Mm-hmm. That's an example of kind of like a big idea that took some time to develop. Another sort of mental health related win that is a much smaller idea is we had a high school where an idea that was surfaced in the event was we should have a passing period during the day. High schools typically run on a 5 or 6 minute passing period between classes. So the idea was, what if we had, maybe the passing time between second and third period was extended to be more like 9 or 10 minutes? We could shave a minute off of each of the 6 classes during the day so that this one passing period would be a little bit longer and give kids a little time to kind of catch their breath during the school day and, spend a few extra minutes with their friends instead of having to rush around, maybe actually have a couple of minutes to use the restroom, et cetera. And, it's a very, very simple kind of an idea. And that high school principal was great. He said, let's test this out a couple of times and see. And they ran into a couple of issues around bottlenecks where kids would all of a sudden, line up over here for this restroom or whatever. And so they had to work through some of the bottleneck kinks, but now they run that schedule. They actually started off running it once a week. They ran it on Fridays. Now they run that schedule every day of the week. And it was such a popular sort of innovation that gave kids and staff a few extra minutes between second, third period to catch their breath. And they really saw it as sort of a mental health solution. Like let's not, drive this kind of stressful, schedule. Let's come up with something that provides a little bit of a break for everybody. And it's been just massively popular. So, these are the kinds of ideas, big ideas, small ideas. There's an amazing range of ideas that come through this process. And, at the end of the day, I often say to folks, like, look, you're going to get really cool, new ideas that will work. I said, but even more importantly, what's going to happen is whether it's staff or students, whoever you're inviting into this process, what you're going to really impact is the culture. The organization, because people are going to suddenly feel like leadership cares. Like leadership is interested in the ideas of others, not just, in their own ideas. And if you can build a culture around that, around people having voice in your organization, it's amazing the commitment you're going to get from the members who didn't have a voice before, who now do have voice. And, it's pretty amazing. It's the ideas are awesome. And so I can go on and on with examples, but really what's the biggest sort of return on investment here is the way people feel differently about working or living in your organization. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? And I kind of went on and on there.
No, it makes a ton of sense. And I love that the examples you gave kind of call back to that initial misconception of innovation as having to be rooted in some kind of emergent technology or, a tech right. advancement. It's such a good example of accessible innovation. I mean, really what we're doing is looking for ways to get down into the foundations and make things better, you know, with big sweeps, sometimes small sweeps. But I thought those were fantastic examples of that very thing. I'm curious if you could go a little bit deeper into the ways that school cultures are changing, because now teachers and students are having, you know, greater voice, greater opportunity to contribute. You know, when we think about crowdsourcing, you know, you mentioned that word and people usually think of, you know, Kickstarter or GoFundMe, you know, these ways to kind of raise money. But beyond giving voice, is there anything else that crowdsourcing is doing when it comes to innovation?
You know, yes. I mean, I think take some time to nurture this culture. It doesn't happen right away. But what I notice that happens in organizations that stick with this for a few years, and what you start to see is this, is a change in the way people think about problems, right? It's the best way for me to describe this is organizations develop sort of an agility, an ability to respond quickly. You know, when they see a problem, they don't fear it. They don't, you know, worry about it. They don't say, well, you know, the principal should really do something about this, or, you know, it's much more about, hey, we know how to solve these problems. We can do this. Let's organize around, you know, the process that we know works. And let's solve this thing. You know, let's, you know, we have this sort of bumper sticker in Innovate K-12. It's about having a bias toward action, you know, that you have to have that bias toward action to say, you know what, let's not sit back and admire this problem. We can't have five meetings. You know, we're going to have one meeting and we're going to come up with an idea that we think we can test. And when you start to, you know, convince people that you're committed to that kind of, you know, cadence, you know, that we have a bias toward action. We're going to get an idea forward and we're going to test it out. Because when you test that idea, you're going to learn, right? And that's the whole, you know, the lean startup protocol. You know, I just think so often, Rebecca, in education, we're so paralyzed by the problems. We think we have to sit back and have, you know, 5-6 meetings before we can do anything. And I think one of the best, you know, outcomes that we see is organizations, schools, school districts, they start to see, like, we can move faster, you know, and develop that agile, you know, response. And that carries forward, you know, that changes you as an organization. You become less fearful of problems, more ready to sort of tackle them, solve them. And, you know, that's kind of a rare thing in our profession, you know, to have that kind of a culture that doesn't fear problems or fear change. They really embrace it.
Yeah. What you're saying, Eric, is truly so powerful, because, you know, we talked about a lot of our processes being built around the idea of economies of scale. And I mean, what that means at face value is that when there are problems, those are problems of scale. And those just kind of feel intuitively immovable, yes. Right? Like, oh my gosh, like we have to gather all the troops and, you know, make a war plan before we even take one step forward. But what you're saying is when we just start to get moving, we're able to learn what we need to know, and the change happens a lot more quickly. I mean, you used the word agile a couple of times, and I don't think anybody would think of the education system of schools and districts as being agile, but it really is possible, especially if we're starting where we can, you know, starting with the things that we can do now and building on that.
Yeah. And, you know, Rebecca, I think such a critical piece of that puzzle is leadership. You know, we sort of use a tagline at Innovate K-12 that we're inspiring the next generation of innovative school leaders, because we really need that. We need that next generation of school leaders to really understand innovation and innovation science. And you know, we went through the era of organizational leaders. And thank goodness we moved towards instructional leaders, and I really think we're going to evolve into innovation leaders. You know, folks who know how to lead in that uncertain space of innovation and problem solving. You know, that's really what we're focused on, because if the leadership is comfortable with that kind of, you know, problem solving methodology, and they're not afraid of testing an idea, the reward is so huge, because, again, you know, first of all, you're going to solve a lot of problems faster than you ever did before. But the way you distribute leadership in that kind of a model, where you get more of your you know, frontline staff involved in the process, it really lifts up the whole organization. And they turn and look at you as the leader and say, hey, you gave us this. You gave us this opportunity. And it elevates the leader in that environment as well. So I think it's, you know, if we can get that generation of leaders to come forward and really embrace this approach, you know, I think the future looks really bright. And I see leaders in our network, and I'm so impressed. You know, some of our principals and you know, superintendents who they're really super courageous in that they are really embracing this. And you know, even though it's a little uncertain, it's a little scary, but they're trusting it, and they see that, you know, there's a reward for their trust. You know, they get to see their organizations really, you know, solve problems and get excited.
Yeah, and I think it really empowers teachers too to take that same model back to their classrooms and pass on that permission to their students, right? And then you have now a school culture of partnership, kind of through and through. Talk a little bit about some of the characteristics of this innovation leader. What does he or she look like? What are they doing? What do they sound like on a day-to-day basis?
You know, I think it can be summarized best by sort of a what if mentality. You know, it's like, yeah, what if we tried that? What if we, you know, tested this idea? Or, you know, I think just having that, you know, it's so easy and so common to find leaders that they just start with no. You know, they just start with, you know, well, that just doesn't fit the model. That just doesn't, you know, that's not how we've done things. You know, that's, you know, so I think that leader that we're envisioning, they really are somebody who starts, and I'm not saying you got to start with yes. I mean, I was a high school principal for 6 years. I mean, I know it's, you know, everybody's approaching you every day mm-hmm. with their idea.
Right.
sometimes it's times 10, you know, and so you can't walk around saying, yes, that's not responsible leadership. But if you've got a method to say, look, you know, hey, when we run our innovation event, you know, in October, I want you to put that idea in because I think it's an awesome idea. But let's see how the rest of the crowd feels, right? Because it's not enough just to live in a vacuum and have an idea. I mean, you've got to know how to socialize your idea. You've got to know how to build a big, you know, vision so that other people get excited about it too. You know, I mean, there are so many people who, you know, kind of have an idea, but they don't know how to socialize it. They don't know how to share it. And that doesn't work. You know, this has to be a collaborative sharing of an idea where other people get excited too. They see value in it. And so, you know, we're oftentimes coaching those kind of idea champions in how to build a bigger vision or how to include more people in their dream so that it can inspire others. You know, that's super important. So I think that leader, that kind of innovation leader, the characteristics of that person is somebody who knows how to kind of spark that, you know, that conversation, not so much that they're starting with yes, but they're starting with, you know, possibility. What if, you know, what if that idea were to take off, you know, where might we go next? You know, that kind of how might we mm-hmm. mentality. It's such an important skill set. And, you know, the truth is it's not, you know, I don't see that as often as I wish I did. You know, leaders today who have that kind of how might we, what if kind of, you know, starting point. And that's what we're trying to grow. We're trying to show principals, superintendents that there's a responsible, structured way to open up the door to these ideas. And, you know, we've built this toolkit that we know works. And if they join our network and kind of be plug into our process, they're going to find that there is a, you know, there's a way forward there. You know, we're not just throwing things against the wall to see what sticks. I mean, there's a very thoughtful, structured method that we're using that's research-based, it's evidence-based. And, you know, we have to build trust with leaders to show them this is a safe way to go forward. This isn't reckless. This is not irresponsible. These are taxpayer dollars. And we know it, you know, so we're not going to put you in a bad situation where you're, you know, putting yourself at risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really key. I think that the how might we and the what if attitude is pretty counterintuitive to the way that education as an institution has been set up for, you know, the majority of history, at least as far as I've had visibility, and you know, the premium has really been on expertise and knowledge and what can be handed down. But the way that we're able to access information and democratize, you know, the gathering of knowledge now kind of flips the script for us a little bit and allows those opportunities to step into a more powerful what if kind of scenario. And really what that's doing is inviting students, educators, school staff, parents, community into the process, you know, and allowing everyone to kind of construct learning together, which is, I mean, 10 times more powerful, maybe 100 times more powerful, but it feels very risky because it's different than what we have traditionally known.
Well, I think there's also, there's kind of a generational shift here too. You know, I think that, you know, the kind of broadly speaking, kind of the millennial generation has really, you know, they kind of come into the workplace expecting to have this kind of a voice. And if they don't find it, they'll look elsewhere. You know, so I often say to, you know, a lot of times our current, you know, leadership are Gen X or boomer folks. And I'll often say, it's like, look, you know, the folks you're hiring today, they expect to find this kind of, you know, access to you. And if you're not providing it, you know, you're going to have a hard time attracting top talent. And in the next, you know, in the Gen Z, which is coming into the workforce really quickly here, it's just going to be that, you know, dynamic all over again. So I think it's there's a generational shift here that really, you know, brings to the workforce an expectation that this exists. And when they find that it's not there, they're going to go elsewhere.
Right. And so I think that's a good segue into something I wanted to tap on a little bit here, which is the role of external partners, entrepreneurs, local businesses, industry professionals, you know, for schools and educators to be able to have visibility into global innovation and best practices and design thinking and creativity and all of that can be so powerful in the innovation process. What is the role of external partners like ed startups and local businesses? How can they support and build into a school's innovation efforts?
Well, you know, I think it's, you know, I think there's a lot of entry points. You know, the way we built our toolkit is really by design, it's sort of vendor agnostic. You know, we're not identifying a vendor solution to problems. We're, you know, although there oftentimes are, you know, there mm-hmm. are partners that can solve, you know, the problem that you're working on. So I think there is a way for us to connect the you know, external partners as sort of solution providers. You know, so there's, you know, and honestly, it's like sometimes when we sit back and look at the sort of the aggregate data that comes through our software, you know, there's a lot of information about what frontline educators feel are the pain points, you know, what they're feeling every day, and describing, you know, those pain points that I think, you know, I really wish external partners would have access to that data to be able to, you know, see the voice of frontline staff and what they're feeling, seeing, thinking. So there's, you know, there's certainly, I think, an opportunity for us to close the gap between, you know, what it feels like to be on the front line in education today and who are those people trying to solve some of those bigger problems? How do we close that gap? That's something that we've been, you know, trying to puzzle our way through a little bit. Like, how can we help connect those two? I don't know if that answers your question exactly, Rebecca. I mean, maybe.
No, it does. And I think that you really kind of hit the nail on the head that it uncovers some more questions. You know, it kind of reveals a gap right now that I think a lot of players are feeling, both from the education side of things and from an external position. And yeah, I was curious to get your thoughts on that, but I'm resonating with what you said. It's what I've seen and experienced as well. You know, I've worked with teachers across the country for several years now, and I've heard the same message, you know, from state to state, from many of these teachers, and it has to do with their experience around quote unquote, you know, another new thing or another new initiative or what some people call the shiny object syndrome, right? So many things are changing year over year in school districts, and sometimes teachers feel like they can't catch their breath with what they're being asked to do from one year to the next. What's the difference between true innovation and the shiny object syndrome?
Yeah. You know, that's really an awesome question. You know, I think, you know, from just kind of from an Innovate K-12 perspective, I'll answer it from our perspective as a organization, as a network. You know, I think what really distinguishes between that shiny object versus true innovation for our members is that you know, sort of happens in the third year of membership in our network. You know, when your staff, your students, your parents, whomever you're engaging, when they see your deep commitment to this kind of a process, you know, for this isn't a one-off. This isn't a, we're going to do this and then it's never going to happen again. You know, when members of the organization see a deep commitment to, you know, full engagement of the stakeholders on, you know, identifying and solving problems, you know, that's when I think you turn a corner and it becomes like, this is who we are now. This is how we do things now. You know, the old way is gone, and it wasn't just a one-off event, a one-time thing that we did. This is a part of our culture. It's a commitment to this process over time that that makes it not just something shiny and new, but makes it a true culture shift.
Mm-hmm. And maybe also the element of things being done, the feeling of things being handed to you or done to you rather than being done with you.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. So we've talked about some really rich and meaty stuff here. But I love what David Allen, you know, the author of the book, Getting Things Done, he talks about identifying the next thing. So if the big idea is to create a culture of innovation, what is the right now next thing that educators, that schools, that districts could do to get the ball rolling?
You know, I really believe that, you know, to build that culture of innovation, you have to have a sort of a methodology that's evidence-based and research-based that you are ready to execute on. You know, it can't just be sort of chaos theory and throwing things against the wall to see what sticks. I mean, I think there's a lot of folks find us after they've tried that, and they say, we need more structure here, you know? And so I think it's a real commitment to a method or a process. I think folks who work in private industry, who maybe work in companies that have innovation programs, that's the first thing you'll see, that there's a very well-defined structure that drives innovation. It's not haphazard, it's not guesswork. And so I think, you know, what I would say to, and, you know, we're just one solution, Innovate K-12. We've taken, you know, the methods that we think really work and we've stitched them together, and, you know, we help districts that you know, that like our approach. There are definitely other approaches, you know, of course. And so, but, you know, my recommendation to anybody who wants to, you know, what's the next step? It's to take that step toward a structured, you know, clear, research-based, evidence-based approach to innovation, and you know, and commit yourself to that. You know, it's a commitment. It can't just be short cycle, short term. It's got to be, you know, we have to get through the front end and the back end of innovation, and we have to do it for two or three cycles before we can say, you know, did this work or not. I think there's, in education, we're, you know, notorious for trying something for a couple of months, and if it's not working, we throw it away and we try something else. And, you know, there needs to be a little bit more of a responsible sort of commitment to innovation that, you know, has to go a little bit further than that.
Yeah, I think that really ties it up so well. So at the end of every episode, I love to ask our guests, who are you giving an A to these days?
I would say I'm giving an A to those leaders who really see a path to the future through innovation. You know, that they see how it is not only a strategy, but it's a leadership. It's an approach to leadership. You know, those folks, I'm giving those folks an A. You know, I'll give an A minus or a B plus to those folks who are searching for it. You know, who are kind of getting close. I mean, I see so many of those folks, and I'm on the phone or on email with so many people. Like, I can tell they're on the right path, but they just haven't quite, you know, locked in on the vision for it. But I see so many people who have locked in, who they get it. They see that. Innovation is a strategy. It's a leadership. It's an approach to leadership that that really resonates with 21st century skills and with the generations that are coming into our workforce in our classrooms today. And I'm just like I believe with kind of like standards based grading. It's like everyone can get an A. You know, it's we're not on a bell curve here. You know, mm-hmm. Every leader could get this and understand this approach and. You know, capture it and use it in their environments. And, you know, everybody could get an A, literally.
Right. Well, and you and your team are doing incredible work to move us collectively forward into this space. So how can people get connected with you and with what you're doing, Eric?
Yeah, you know, we're pretty easy to find on the internet. We're Innovate K-12. You can put .org or .com or .net or whatever you want after that, and you'll find us. But yeah, there's plenty of information on our website. We've got 30 school districts. We're in 10 different states right now. We're all over the country. We're in Alaska. We're in Georgia. You know, we're all over the place. So it's I hope that folks can find us if they're interested, and just shoot me an email through that website, and we try to be pretty quick to respond.
Fantastic. And of course, I'll make sure that all of that is in the show notes and make it really easy for people to get connected with you. Eric, it has been such a pleasure chatting with you today. And I myself feel kind of renewed and hyped to move this work forward alongside of you.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate that, Rebecca.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Off the Assembly Line. You can get Eric's info and other episode goodies at offtheassemblyline.co. If you're enjoying the show, leave a review and share it with someone who needs to hear it. I'd also love to hear from you. If you go to offtheassemblyline.co and scroll to the bottom, you'll see a form that lets you share the questions you have, the topics you're interested in, or the names of changemakers that I need to know about and have on the show. Thanks for helping me build the Off the Assembly Line community one week at a time. Now go make a ruckus.